Welcome back to We Are Here, a Keystone Edge podcast starring Pennsylvanians making their mark. I'm your host, Lee Stabert. This series has been created in partnership with PA Humanities, an organization dedicated to building community and sparking change. We hope these conversations will do the same. Philadelphia has long been a city of immigrants. Over the last four centuries, families have arrived here from England, Ireland, Italy, Central America, Mexico, Vietnam, Cambodia, West Africa, from all over the world. They have left their mark on this place through enduring cultural institutions, murals, architectural styles, regional slang, and of course, water ice and weekend barbacoa. Lucky for us, people are still coming here, and there are organizations ready to welcome them. Today, we're talking to two such groups, both committed to the idea that staying connected to one's culture is an important way to feel at home in a new country. 3 Aksha is a dance company that aims to preserve and promote traditional Indian culture through dance, theater, and education. Taya Puerto Riqueño is a community organization in the El Barrio neighborhood of North Philadelphia that uses art and design to spur economic development and celebrate Puerto Rican and Latino culture. We are lucky to have representatives from both these groups joining us in studio for a lively conversation.
My name is Nacheli Julian Ortiz Gonzalez, and I'm the executive director of Taller Puerto Riqueño.
My name is Viji Raf. I'm the artistic director of 3 Aksha.
Wonderful. Thank you guys both so much for being here. Let's start a little bit with your personal biographies. Viji, how did you first fall in love with dance?
I was born into the family of dancers. My dad would be a dance teacher. You know, even before I was born, I was taught how to dance inside my mom's tummy because my mom was into singing for the same dance style. So I started watching the dance when I was literally a couple of months old. That's when they would just carry me along and watched all the performances. So this became a part of heritage for us because, you know, that's what we did. That's all the household did. So falling in love, I don't know. I was forced to get into it. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. Because that's all I saw day in and day out. But as and when I grew, I just said, you know what? This is what I'm good at. Why don't I just take this seriously? You know, when I was about 16, I got an opportunity to go to England. That's where I did my rest of the studies and everything.
You can hear that in your accent. Your accent is like this palimpsest of, you know, American English, British English.
So, yeah, you know, I went when I was about 16 to England to work for a dance company because they just had one of their dancers ill and they landed up having me as a swap dancer. And that was it. And that's where I continued to study as well as dance. And that's where I learned the nuances of how the dance can be made into a company. You know, when I got married, my husband is a doctor in UPenn. That's the reason we moved here. But now he works for NIH. But, you know, that's the reason we moved to Philly. And then next thing I know is I did see a lot of, you know, void in culture and heritage, especially with the Indian immigrants. That's when I said, we need good quality dancing in this part of the world. So that's how I started this whole 3 Aksha.
Nacheli, can you just talk about community work and how you got into community work? How did you first get passionate about
it? Well, so I am a fashion designer by trade, and I started in design and art since I was very young. I had meningitis when I was very young, and I was in a coma, so my motor skills were not developed. And I started working in art, in music, in dance. And I then decided to go and study fashion design. I was a professor for many years, but I also work with participatory design with the community. And my fashion work is focused on how fashion has empowered different social movements, specifically in Latin America and in Puerto Rico. And I was in academia for 17 years. I was in Moore College of Art and Design and the chair of the fashion design department. And then I decided that I wanted to go back to my roots of community work. And that is how I arrived to Taller Puerto Riqueño, and how all my path, I think, has developed and take me to this point, like, because it didn't make a lot of sense when I was doing it. So now all this combination and multidisciplinarity is making a lot of sense in Taller Puerto Riqueño.
Yeah, this seems like a good moment to maybe talk a little bit about your organization and what exactly they do, because they do community work, but it is very connected to arts and culture, correct? Can you talk about that connection?
Yes. So Taller Puerto Riqueño was founded in 1974 by activist Puerto Rican artists that came from Puerto Rico, and they saw the need of having a space for artists and youth to discuss their heritage and discuss where they come from and why they are here in the United States. So they did that through serigraphy, and that is when Taller Puerto Riqueño was born. From the years, we has expanded from the education program to a gallery space. We have the biggest bilingual bookstore, and we have many other programming for the whole community to discuss Puerto Rican history and find intersectionalities with the Latinx community and the African diaspora. So also it's a space to celebrate ourselves and to be free. And I think that is very precious for our communities to hold and create spaces.
I think that there, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I've even heard stories from, you know, my family were immigrants 2 or 3 generations ago, but that there is often a tension between you want to come to America, you want to fit in, you want to become comfortable in this society, this culture, and then you want to preserve what you came from. And both of your organizations seem to be focusing on that cultural side, and that is an important part of staying connected. And I'm sure it also becomes more important as you have more generations and mm-hmm. people get further and further from sort of that original point. Can you talk a little bit about how 3Aksha does that work and keeps people connected?
You know, keeping, you know, the first, second, and third generation, those are the 3 generations you see at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the immigrants that they came in, you know, with an American dream. Their children were born, and now their children and children were born. So the link of their culture and heritage is kind of diminishing. Now the parents are feeling that. That's the reason they come looking for us. And that's the reason why we are there talking about our heritage. As you said, you know, it is necessary for them to know where they came from, what the culture was, what the heritage was, what the history was, you know, and talk about why it is important for them to identify that and recognize and don't feel ashamed about who they are, where they came from, and hold on to it. And, you know, for example, when about 10 years ago, because our organization started in 2010. When you said 1975, I was like, I was just then born. So, you know, the organization, when it started at 2010, you know, we have the symbolic way of wearing our little, you know, bindi, which is, you know, identification of you're from India. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just to protect your third eye, mm-hmm. you know, and all we people were okay with it. But then the kids born, brought up in this country were like, no, I don't want to look different. Mm-hmm. And from there to where they're very comfortable saying, I want to wear this so people say it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been a journey. That's the journey that I wanted to see, that I wanted them to feel proud of where they came from,
yeah,
who they are. And they're very happy to celebrate that today in the middle of downtown, in the middle of suburbs. You see them feeling so proud of wearing their costumes and wearing their beautiful silks and recognizing that I am from this particular country and I represent the heritage from India.
And I think it's very difficult, the sense of belonging. And you are never too much from back home, but you mm-hmm. are never too much American. And it's this interesting limbo, but having these spaces where you can celebrate both, that you can be speaking English or Spanglish, and that you can be studying the people that came before you and that made the path for you to be here, is powerful. It's very powerful how you see people and young people change in how they walk and how they dress and how they speak. So I think is also part of healing those two sides that as immigrants we develop.
Vijay, I would love if your company specializes in a very specific form of dance. So I would love you to give us a little crash course in that specific style of dance. And I also just want to be careful because India is a very big place, much bigger than Puerto Rico.
Yes.
And so I don't want to speak as though it's like a monolithic culture. So you can get a little more specific maybe about where this specific form of dance comes from. And maybe, you know, are most of the people you work with here in Philadelphia, are they from all over India? Are they from a specific region?
you know, just like in America, there are 50 states, there are 28 different states in India. The 28 different states speaks 28 different languages. And the food that you get in all these 28 different states are very, very different from each other. So the chicken tikka masala is just from one part. That's it. It's got nothing to do with the other part of India. So in the same way, we have 8 different, you know, classical dance styles of India. And we also have over 27 different styles of folk forms, which are done specifically for different occasions, for harvest, for, you know, like the festival of colors, festival of light. So the style that I perform and the one that I'm catering to people here in Philadelphia is called Bharatanatyam. It's from southern India. The origin took place in Tamil Nadu. It's a temple dance where people danced in temples as ritual to the deity in the particular temple. And if you were to go to any temples in southern India, you will see the carvings of all of these beautiful dances as a full life size. So coming to the dance form, the main 3 elements that we do is we use a lot of footwork. So again, footwork as in like it makes noise, but it makes noise in multiples of 3s, 4s, 5s, 7s, 9. And these 5 basic structures of rhythm is multiplied into 7 different styles, giving up to about 360 different styles of rhythm structures. And
we're going to need to add a YouTube video to this, a link on our page. Because I hear you talk, I just can't wait to look it up and see what it actually looks and sounds like.
You know, for example, if I were to just say, you know, the dance is learned in such a way that, you know, Oakley, if you want to hear, these are the steps that we do. And then there'll be a guy who will be singing this. He'll say all of these, you know, rapping in the mouth, and we will be replicating that in the footwork.
Wow. It's beautiful because in Puerto Rico, we have the bomba y plena, that is a music in the same, yes, that the person dancing controls the person that is doing the drums. Rhythm,
yes.
So it's marvelous how we have so much
alive. It goes side by side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the people who you cater to, students that you have and people come to performances, do they tend to be from southern India, or do you get people from all over?
They are from, I have kids who, you know, you're talking about third generation, you're talking about second generation. So either they're half African, half Indian, half American, half Indian. So you're looking at kids who are from different parts of the world, and you're looking at dancers who are from different parts of India too. So this particular art form has popularized quite a bit, that it doesn't have restrictions. You're not going to say, you know, if you were to go to India and look at this particular art form, it's there in every new corner of India. So you'll be surprised at how popular these classical forms of dance from India are, because it's known to everyone and everybody adores it and want to learn how to perform.
Yeah, and I would not be surprised, please correct me if I'm wrong, that a lot of our modern forms of social media and things will be very good for this type of thing. I mean, I can already see the TikTok videos, and I'm too old for TikTok, but I, you know, I'm sure that things like that really help proliferate these styles and help people learn about them and try them themselves.
You're listening to We Are Here from Keystone Edge, produced in partnership with PA Humanities, which believes in putting people first. Their work champions the humanities across Pennsylvania, centering growth, equity, and community as a pathway to positive, lasting change. Learn more at pahumanities.org.
Tadja Puertorriqueño, you, from what I've read, make a direct line between arts and culture and economic development. Can you talk a little bit about the work that you do in that space?
Yes, we have an amazing building, an amazing facility in Fairhill, and we offer after school classes, but we have the youth program in which we try to support the students in different areas, or they want to go to college in the arts or design area, they want to create their own business, or they want to do a trade job. We need to understand that in the context that we are, sometimes thinking directly to go to college is not a possibility immediately. So what we want to do is that our community can see that they can do works while they are working with their big dreams, their big goals, and we want to support them through that process. So that is one of our programs in which we support the student during the whole high school to go to college or to decide what is the most important path to make possible art and design. Art is not something that has been sold to Latinx people. We are normally sold service jobs, and art is more exclusive. We also have a seamstress cooperative in which people that decide to have clothes or they need clothes, they can work with us and we can produce their little garments. So we have multiple ways of celebrate our culture. And I think because the colonial status of Puerto Rico, we have found a little of disconnection with Latin America. So I think it's very important to feel part of a bigger community. So as Puerto Ricans, understanding that we are very close to the Latinx community and the African diaspora, we understand that we have another kind of power, of community power. So I think that is the goal of Taller Puerto Riqueño, to be that space in which we can support each other, because we understand that going out of poverty in our community is a holistic environment. It cannot be only with social services. We also need to heal. We need to heal the trauma. We need to give other resources to the community.
Yeah. And before we got on mic, you were talking that you also have a new program where you're helping people with digital design and podcasting, actually, and video editing and these sort of digital, really transferable skills as well.
Yes. The youth is very natural with all the technology. And it's very funny because for us, we started as an organization that was analog, all serigraphy, but now we can translate that in Illustrator, that is a vector art. So we try to do those alignments with, yes, this is our roots, but this is the way that you can do it technologically. Mm-hmm. And the youth is so eager to learn. Everything is to their hands. Yeah. So when you have that personal connection and when you are giving them that time, it's different because the technology is easier for them. I think the connection with the human part is a little more difficult, and we give them that.
Yeah. I mean, you're also bringing kids together to dance, which is something, you know, getting people away from their screens, mm-hmm. getting people together to move with joy. And
you know, that is a connection that I also wanted to add to, is that, you know, physically doing this art form and documenting that and then taking the credit for doing that particular art style. You know, as she said, they are pro. There are times in which I'm learning from them rather than I teaching them, you know, in terms of technology. Mm-hmm. So they are really good at it. And it's become a way of expressing. And there are audience for them in there too, mm-hmm. you know, be it the Instagram or little stories that they create. They do have the audience who appreciate and who recognize their hard work and recognize, I mean, media has become a big part of art culture, heritage. And I think it's a great way of making them aware, and they are proud of doing whatever they're doing. So
it's an accessible space. And I think another thing that is very important in these organizations is the people that we serve maybe will never met if we were back home. Mm. So how we are breaking all these preconceptions of, like, you're from the South, I'm from the North. Even in Puerto Rico, that is so little, we have different words and we have discussions about how to call food. But here, creating this space in which all those differences are eliminated, and art and culture is the highlight and is the main goal. It takes away so many baggage that is not even ours, it's generational. So it put us in this moment. We are here, we are together. And
that's actually the name of the podcast.
Yes,
thank you.
We're here and we deserve to be here, and it's beautiful to be here, and it's beautiful what we are.
And make the most of that being there. You know, that's the motto of telling them about the art or the culture, or the heritage, is you here and you have it in front of you. Have it all and enjoy it all.
Yeah. Yes.
Can we talk a little bit about funding? And especially you guys both receive PA Sharp grants. When you get a chunk of money, what are your immediate needs? What is this money going towards? And how is it going to improve the programming and the services you're able to offer?
We love the word unrestricted. No, I think is very difficult to maintain because all the time and all the energy that takes grant making. Mm-hmm. But I think with support like this, the work that we do is more expensive than many others because we are immigrants, and that mm-hmm. brings other elements that people don't take some of that in consideration. So just transportation for our pieces from Puerto Rico to here is a huge other cost that other organizations will not have. So having this support in the middle of the pandemic was a great resource for operations of Taller Puerto Riqueño. Yeah.
It's the same, you know, the pandemic just put us in a corner, especially with, you know, performing companies.
Yeah.
We were taking, you know, most of our chunk of money was coming with performing in place A, place B, but then nothing was happening. And then came the COVID, and then came the Zoom performances, and nothing was paid.
Yeah.
And everybody likes to do the same even now. The minute it's ticketed show, you're just going to see 40% of people there. The rest 60 is empty still. Mm-hmm. We're struggling. So put everything together, we're literally starting from zero, what we were 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. To have support from PA Sharp has made us realize, okay, there's a way for us to, you know, gather everything, put everything back in place. And I know, we both know that it's a long road ahead, mm-hmm. but at least there are small blocks that are going one on top of the other. That's giving us hope, saying, okay, we did not waste our, you know, 12, 15 years of hard work.
And it's interesting talking about dance, and when you were explaining more specifically about this particular style that you do, you know, both you can see it visually, you can see it on Zoom, but you were talking about the percussive elements of it. And that is something that you can really only feel in person, right? Where your body like vibrates mm-hmm. with the sounds and the foot movements and all of that.
This particular, you know, performing art is one such, it has a different, you know, finish when you are in front of it versus when you're on the screen.
Yeah.
And we can connect, but not 100% as we can be when we are in person. Mm-hmm. And that's got cut off because people are refusing to get out of their homes to go and watch. So it's just not working the way we want. Mm-hmm. And with PA Sharp, we were able to do, you know, two different projects. So we brought in a dance company from South Africa in the month of June, and June, July, we toured around and we performed about six different shows in different venues to see how similar it is that a Black community creates their art versus a brown community creates their arts. And we swapped both our art forms and we relearned theirs and they learned ours. And we created this project of saying that nothing is impossible.
Yeah.
Everything is possible, be it COVID or now.
Yes, and I think also this grant helped us to not struggle in the process of rethinking mm-hmm. how our audience changed and what are their real needs and how we need to align our programming to those new needs. We have a new world, so we have been doing a lot of introspection on knowing how to connect with people and how people can feel safe coming back to the spaces and understand the value of being together. Mm-hmm. So I think this grant have helped Taller to do that process.
So what can this country, this state, this city do better to welcome immigrants and to help them strike that balance we've been talking about of feeling at home and making a living and building community while also retaining that real strong tie to their cultural heritage? It's a big question.
Wow. Well, I think everything started with education. And I think if Philadelphia has been historically a very diverse mm-hmm. city, but we need to see culturally we embrace it. I think we are celebrated. We are there, but I think other needs need to be met, at least in the Latinx community. We still being the poorest community in Philadelphia. So it's holistic. We cannot do art and cultures if our students are hungry, so we need to feed them first. We are in a food desert. So being in El Barrio, in the poorest city of the cities, that part has been difficult. And I think all start with education and how we can access those next steps and how the city can provide safe nets for the people to keep leaving poverty behind. I was in a conversation today and we were talking about how sometimes in this process, you cannot leave the people that you're serving in the second step. You need to wait until the third or the fourth step, because it's when they really are secure and they can have that safety net that mm-hmm. people of color, Black people and brown people do not have from inherit.
Yeah. You know, as to top it to what she's talking, one thing I have been doing to my organization is this immaterial of the size is small, or are we doing it in a small library, or is it in the city hall, you know, court? It doesn't matter whether there's 50, 20 or 100 people, just go show up and say you exist. Mm-hmm. That's been the motto for past 2 years. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a park, if it's a street, or if it is even a small alley that they want to just bring in attention to, we are there. So that has been the motto. And I've just said to myself, doesn't matter. You know, it might have 30 people watching you for the 2 hour show that you've been there, but it is worth it because up 30 is going to talk about us to 5 others. Mm-hmm. So that's just going to bring us more people and awareness. So awareness has been a big part of the company's work, because it's, unless you go forward and say, I exist, nobody's going to know you exist.
Yeah.
So existence has been really hard for us as immigrants, mm-hmm. but then, you know, no giving up, you know, just keep on saying, I exist. I'm here.
Holding and creating spaces.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think this has been a sort of a subtext of the conversation, but I want to bring it up to text, which is talking about humanities, which is something that this podcast is focused on. And I think, you know, from dance to humanities, is that something that you guys are intentionally thinking about? Are you talking about the history of these dance forms with your students? Are you talking about the cultural legacy?
You know, the history of this art form is anywhere between 2000 BC and 2080. So the first thing that these dancers learn about is its heritage. Mm-hmm. How long ago all of this started, and how important it is for us to hold on to it for the next 10 generations. You know, and I know because I've had, you know, within my existence here in 12 years, I've had second generation of the same come to me to learn.
Yeah.
So I know those people who learned from me felt the need for them to bring their children here. So the idea is to have this culture, you know, hold on to it, and hold on not just for the sake of it, but hold on to it with the values, what it gives and what roots it creates, plus, you know, what joy you get out of this.
Hearing you talk, I'm like, America is such a baby country. We're like little, we're like still we're still like a toddler country. I mean, hearing about an art form being thousands of years old, like, incredible, incredible.
Yes. And I think in Taller Puerto Riqueño, everything that we do is very history-based, because our political status, because our history has not been said. So, for example, we use music to say, for example, La Plena is a music that the people, the criollos, the people that were mixed in Puerto Rico, used to use to say the news. So it was the local newspaper through songs. So in the Puerto Rican community is a lot of political resistance through arts and culture. So we teach those powerful moments to our students and to our learners.
Yeah, and I think Puerto Ricans more than other groups live in a little bit more of an in-between, because you're part of the United States, but also not. But, you know, there's sort of, I'm sure, some tension there.
Yes, it's very interesting and it's very difficult sometimes to people to understand that. And it's a constant fight of the colonized mind and what are we doing? Where are we going? So those are discussions that we have through art. And it's very interesting to see how the generations see things different, and how art, again, and going back to those roots, can make a space where they can analyze it from another perspective.
I just want to talk about the future of your organizations, and you know, you can also speak more broadly about the future of your communities and where you think things are headed.
You know what? Us community, we want to build and make it stronger and focus on the art, focus on the culture, focus on holding on to these values that they learn here and holding on to the identity that they created out of this organization. You know, when they go away to college, I want them to be proud of which they have been. You know, they have these college teams, dance teams and competitive teams, and they are part of it. They eventually start as, you know, just dancers, and they become choreographers, and they feel the power behind. And I see them, you know, taking that torch and taking it around, making it their own. And the thing is, you always think, they learned it from me for 10 years, 12 years, and they're gone. They're gone. That's what you think. But each and every single dancer who were part of my team or company, they are in touch with me even to today, whether they are doctors or lawyers or, you know, pretty much everybody became doctors in Hawaii. But yeah, they're always in touch, and they talk about the small elements that they do, be it the yoga classes that they go, how flexible they are. It's because of the dance. That's the stamp that I want to create. That's the blood rush that I get out of, you know, training all of these beautiful dancers and making them feel proud of their art and culture. And I'm rest assured that they will take it to the next level, and I can stay peace.
I mean, that's a true life skill, that like conflation of diligence and joy. You know, the idea that you can like work hard at something in order for it to bring you joy outside of work, outside of all these other things, but something that you do just as a practice. I think it, you know, serves people well, especially people who go on to become doctors. Yeah. Have higher stress than podcast hosts.
Well, at Taller, I would love to be the place where every Puerto Rican that comes to Philadelphia visit, and that every student, college student that feel homesick, come and feel home for a little while. And I also want to give economical power to the community. And even if we are displaced physically and with gentrification, I would love to have a cultural resistance space. And this was El Barrio. This is El Barrio. And Puerto Ricans arrive here, and we have done an amazing job to keep the El Barrio alive, and the music in the streets and the beautiful dances. And yes, I want to be that place.
That's it for the fourth episode of We Are Here. If you have thoughts on the conversation you just heard or ideas for what we should cover in upcoming episodes, please visit our website, KeystoneEdge.com, or reach us via our social channels at Keystone Edge on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Until next time. Funding for We Are Here comes from PA Humanities and its federal partner, the National Endowment for the Humanities, as part of the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021.